There's this Fincher quote that has absolutely haunted me as I've inched closer and closer to directing my first film. The quote is this: "The fact is, you don't know what directing is until the sun is setting and you've got to get 5 shots and you're only going to get 2. Now, that has been absolutely true as I've directed more and more commercials, shorts, and performance videos. There's almost always a moment in which the entire fate of the project hangs in the balance, and how you make decisions in those moments is the real job. So, as someone who hasn't yet directed a feature, it's easy to idealize making a movie. But it's anything but ideal. It's blood and sweat and tears and bone and marrow. It's real, not some pie-in-the-sky fantasy. So, as I get closer to making my own film, I've found myself wanting to ask so many questions of my friends and directing peers who have managed to run the gauntlet of making their own features. To be honest, they all come back to some version of a core question, which is this: what is the actual reality of directing a movie? How does it feel? What does it look like? So that's what this podcast is about. Notes on directing emerging out of conversations between two directors. Not the film school ideals, not the glorified hindsight, but directing. When you're truly in it. When you're asking yourself why the hell you ever had the audacity to think that you could do this. Welcome to the Process Dispatch. Now, I know I hinted at it, but I recorded the bulk of these interviews several years ago. They, of course, were in the middle of the pandemic when people had some time. I think people were in a particularly reflective mode, and a lot of people weren't really working on their long-form projects. The Daniels, you know, very luckily had just wrapped production, so they were in editorial, but everybody else kind of had hit the brakes on their kind of current slate of projects when I had these conversations. And I do think it ended up being a really interesting kind of time capsule, a way to look back, a way to kind of capture a particular feeling and moment and perspective on these directors' kind of careers and work thus far. However, I absolutely intended on releasing these episodes nearly on top of recording them. I had no plans of recording them and then putting them on the shelf for a couple of years. And to be honest with you, I got a little bit stuck. I kept thinking I was on the precipice of making stages, and as well, I got extremely busy with commercials in an unexpected way. I was busier during the pandemic than I had been in the previous several years, and that caught me off guard. And so I think that, and then I think just the combination of a lot of factors, I got really stuck and felt like I didn't know what the point of putting these conversations out might be, even while at the same time, I feel like I intrinsically knew they were valuable and was excited to see kind of all the progress that these directors had made, and to like imagine many of the conversations that I would love to have with more directors talking about these things. So yeah, I got stuck until basically the beginning of 2022. I brought on my friend Jake McMullen, who is an amazing musician and creative director who really helped get me unstuck, started writing some score, started helping edit the episodes, and then we started just moving forward. Anna Ramos came on to help do some of the logistical things, to help produce the podcast and make sure that we actually got these things off the hard drive and out into the world. And even still, I still felt stuck. It felt hard to make these intros, to do the little pieces, to put the pieces together, to go ahead and put this thing out. And I've been thinking a lot about that. You know, in fact, I recorded a whole series of intros that were completely scripted, and we cut them against the episodes, and it just didn't feel right. It felt too rigid, too kind of constructed. And so I basically went back in and re-recorded the intros in a more conversational way, just like I'm doing now, just speaking straight into the microphone with not a lot of plan. And that felt more appropriate. But before I could even get to that point, I just realized that I probably needed to get somebody on Zoom so that I could talk to them about the podcast, why I hadn't made it, and have a conversation. And hopefully out of that conversation, we could extract elements for an intro, for, you know, trailer for the podcast, for all of these things. And so I just put on Instagram that I needed somebody to jump on Zoom with me. And thankfully, two friends responded nearly immediately. a really amazing photographer and all-around creative person, Meredith Adelaide, and my buddy Raul Serpas replied and said, yeah, we'll jump on. And so what was supposed to be a way to re-record the intros actually kind of evolved into this very introspective, nearly hour-long conversation about why I wanted to make this podcast, why the gap between recording and releasing exists, and what I'm hoping to accomplish next. It ended up being something that I couldn't use for the intros. I ended up having to re-record those anyway. But I do think this conversation was meaningful, and I hope, I want to put this conversation out because I feel like it captured in a pretty clear way how I talked myself out of releasing. That I had a great idea, a great impulse, and then talked myself out of it. And I don't know if you can relate to that, but this is something that I struggle with constantly. A lot of times the excitement of making the thing happens and then the air kind of goes out of the sails when you get into post and you're just like, it's not quite what I thought it was going to be. And you have to fight through that. You have to fight through it and still put it out. Or you have to fight through it and then put it on the shelf permanently. But this kind of like abandoning things for me is a really, it's something that I have to fight quite a bit. So I wanted to put this full conversation out that I had with Meredith and Raul, as this conversation was the jump start to getting the kind of final push to release these episodes. So I'm putting this out. This is the kind of punctuation point on this particular series of conversations for the Process Dispatch. I have big plans for what V2 is going to look like, including bringing on a co-host and having conversations with directors that have made many of my favorite movies. But in the meantime, I wanted to put these out, and I just wanted to kind of be transparent and share what I'm calling this ramble fest between Meredith, Raul, and myself. And hopefully there's something in there that resonates with you, that you realize you're not the only one who goes through these kind of moments of doubting the thing that you've made. Yeah, this is my encouragement to you to just put it out, man. Just finish it. Just release it into the world. You never know what might happen. So thank you for listening to these episodes this season. It means a ton. So with that, here is my Ramble Fest finale for the Process Dispatch.
This present moment.
Yeah.
Ryan Booth, how are you? You're holding your arms against your chest.
I feel a little embarrassed. I think just in general, I feel like I'm like, for me personally, what I'm going through at the moment is this feeling of I'm actively like working with a therapist and kind of going through the like working with basically like a psychiatrist to. It's important to me to get like officially get diagnosed with ADHD. That's okay. Like very important to me because I feel like I'm off the charts. I know I am. And I feel like when I'm in this like a very kind of strange liminal space work-wise right now where I'm kind of, I feel a bit mid-career. I feel a bit like these conversations feel like I feel a bit like these are all my friends. These were just conversations with friends, and all of them now, they've won Sundance. They're directing Marvel movies. They're doing all these things. I feel a little bit like a fuck up who hasn't like, if I had had my shit together, I would be like that as well. Right.
Are you recording right now, by the way?
I am now. I am. Yeah.
Okay. Good. You should. This stuff is really necessary to hear.
Yeah. So I feel like part of my resistance to putting these conversations out is I feel a little bit like my goal was to have conversations with like the directors who have really really inspired me that I don't feel any sense of peer or that I don't feel like are peers. Like an Alfonso Cuarón, right? Like made more than one movie that I feel like, oh my God, if I could make one movie like that in my career, I'd be fine. And I feel like these conversations were like the ones I can just text somebody and be like, hey, do you want to jump on and like have a stupid call at 11 o'clock at night and we'll talk for a couple of hours? Yeah, and now, beautiful. But now they're like, it's like that little conversation is like also now the little conversation with the director of X, Y, or Z, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think it's been interesting as well to like follow up, like the Daniels, for instance. I had a long chat with Daniel Kwan, who told me, you know, because I met up with him I went to one of the New York screenings of the movie before it came out and was just like absolutely floored. And I DP'd a project for them, and the feeling of DPing for them was like, who are you people and how do you know how to do this? Like, I just was like shocked at what it was like to DP for them. And it was interesting. I was just like, dude, you've got to be so excited, because their first movie just landed like a rock, you know, just like everybody was like, what the fuck is this like horseshit, you know?
So good.
And their second one, everybody's like, who are these geniuses? Right. And so it's just interesting that I was talking to him and he was like, you know, what's funny is I thought I would feel better, but now I'm afraid that like, I just made the best thing I'll ever make, and I'll never make something this good again. Like, that was it, you know?
Yeah.
And that was, you know, heartening and sad at the same time to hear him say, you know, just feeling like, it doesn't matter, man. Like, this shit just chases you forever. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't matter if you're successful. If you're successful, like, there's still this thing coming after you. And if you're not successful, then that's the thing coming after you too, you know?
Yeah.
And so I feel like having to be okay, like learning to be okay in the present moment with who you are, with what you do, I feel like is the work, you know what I mean?
And what I'm hearing is you're seeking for an outside opinion to help you feel okay with yourself.
Yo, 100%.
to determine that, okay, there is something, and now I know what it is, so now I can manage that and deal with that.
For sure. For sure.
That's a hard place to be in, especially when you're struggling with something like ADHD, when there's so many different channels that you want to operate in, that you need to operate in,
right?
Where even a sentence can't just like be a sentence, it has to be a sentence plus all these branches, which, you know, a lot of people can hold space for and can hear you,
right,
and can understand,
right?
And it might be different from growing up where people could not,
right?
And you may have gotten in massive trouble for not being able to and nobody understood, but I feel like you're perfectly doing what you need to be doing, and around the people who are doing the things that you admire and that you wish to do as well.
Yeah.
And it's hard not to compare, I'm sure, especially when every single one of those people has done something since you spoke to them.
Yeah. I mean, I think the I say all the time, like, that having kids is, for instance, is this, like, it's actually a tangible, like, it's like having a ever-present reminder of the passage of time, in a way that like that nothing else feels like, you know. It's like, what's 2 years? Like, a couple years, like, no big deal. Whereas like the difference between 2 year in 2 years from where my kids are from where they were 2 years ago, I mean, they're literally just completely huge, you know. Like, they're much bigger. Like, there's just, they're different people. I feel a little bit like these conversations are these like time stamped reminders that like of the passage of time, and not just the passage of time, but like how long the things that I want to engage in actually take, you know, like that you can't just go, like, you could say, I want to go make a movie tomorrow.
Yeah.
And it's not actually possible.
And
not just not possible, even if you could, then the cycle of that thing that you want to make is multiple years, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that these conversations, that's definitely hang up for me on these conversations as well, is just this feeling of like, oh my God, like, I was with the Daniels shooting a project in 2017, and they were talking about we came to shoot this short film that's part of this kind of anthology feature that I did with them. They're like, we came to do this because we kind of hit a wall on writing our script, which mm-hmm. is the movie that they then went and made. Mm-hmm. And it feels a bit like it's 2022, it's almost 2023. And they were like writing, they had already like had the meetings, gotten the funding, were working on the movie in 2017. You know, and it's just mm-hmm. like, Jesus
yeah.
Christ, it's going to yeah.
the grace you must have for yourself.
Oh my
yourself.
God, dude. It's like, it's just, yeah. Yeah. So anyway, yeah, I mean, I think, and this is not just the podcast, it's just in my life in general. I feel like, I'm incredibly impatient. I'm also, I get shit done faster than most people, and I still feel like it takes forever.
Yeah, 100%.
You know what I mean? yeah. And not just that, but that I'm like fucking off and not getting anything done. That I'm like whittling my time away as well. Mm. That's like a constant like feeling in my head. So anyway,
and your fear of mediocrity, if I recall correctly,
my ultimate fear. That's literally my ultimate fear. Yeah, is like that I would be completely and totally mediocre.
What if you let yourself be?
I mean, I probably am. That's the you know what
but
I mean?
Like just admitting to yourself, like, all right, I'm a mediocre guy. And then quickly you will realize you are not.
Yeah, yeah.
But
yeah.
Just admitting that that is an element of you. Like, yeah, I'm a mediocre kind of girl.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
You know, nothing special going on here.
I know. Well, but yeah, for sure. I mean, I feel like that's the thing, right? Is like, if I can make something special, I think what it comes down to is like, if I can make something special, then maybe I won't, that will like outlive me. Then when I die, it won't matter. Right.
Right. So this immortality concept, the fear of death, the
of
fear of being forgotten, the realization that you do feel and are being mirrored as mediocre by all of these people.
Correct.
It's a wonderful sauce to be in. What a gift.
Simmer.
Yourself. Yes. And you've created this space.
Yeah.
And there's so many gifts within this for you too. Yeah. And I hope that also you give yourself a lot of grace and support, because you've created spaces for people to talk about their process. And I'm certain that just being heard mm-hmm. as those directors helped them achieve what they needed to achieve in the last few years since being on your podcast.
To be honest with you, Nikki Atu told me, she said, because I had this conversation with her when she'd only made a short. She had not. Mm-hmm. And she's a Black female, and like, dude, Nikki Atu, I mean, she's like, she intimidates the hell out of me. She's incredible. She's an incredibly powerful person. Mm-hmm. And she told me, which I like, is to this day one of the highest like forms of compliment that I've gotten, is that she was like, everyone always wants to talk about me being like a Black female director. She was like, you just wanted to talk about my directing process. Mm-hmm. And like, it was amazing to be, and of course that's part of it, right? There is that part of me that I bring with me as a director. But like, I also just work with actors and make decisions about where to place the camera and all of these things that aren't defined by my identity. That's not the central point of conversation we need to have all the time, you know?
Right.
And I felt like that actually really made me happy, because I feel like, of course I want to know what directing means from like a core spiritual place. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And of course who you are is part of that. But like, I am interested in the thing about directing that has made me so, not just directing, but filmmaking in specific, that has made me, I think that is convinced me that is the thing I want to spend my time on, is that it requires your entire person to do it well, you know? Mm-hmm. And that I think I'm in kind of eternally curious about other people's process, because no two people are going to approach it the same way, because nobody's the same person. Mm-hmm. But I think that you know, as a DP, I got to be on so many people's sets. I was on so many people's sets. And I'm not on anybody's sets anymore. I'm only on my own set. And that feels like a real kind of like limitation in some ways. Yeah. Not because there's anything wrong with that, but just because I loved getting to see other people work, you know? And so I feel like this podcast for me is a proxy to that kind of experience of like, let me take me onto your set for 2 hours while we talk, you know?
Yeah.
Because I would love to know how you work and what you see and how you approach these things, because I am myself and I'm only on my own sets these days, you know? Mm-hmm. Anyway, yeah.
I've found a lot of similarities in people who have, you know, a neurodivergent mind in that love to investigate the other.
Yes.
More so than giving themselves the space and the acceptance to find what works best for them and truly, truly commit and truly cut out all other inputs, which is difficult too, because the dopamine that is needed to keep the interest.
Right.
And I wonder, you also are on your own sets. You're doing a lot of different things.
For sure.
In the same realm too. But I wonder if DPing gave you kind of a freedom of creation and like the energy moving so you could create, because you finished the Rough Force, what was it called? The first short film that you made.
The Heights?
The Heights.
Yeah.
You made that as you were a DP, or were you transitioning from DP?
I was transitioning, yeah. So I made The Heights and Five Star, which is a short doc. I made those two simultaneously as a like kind of intentional moment of transition, basically.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I forget if I had a follow-up question. But but the differences of your career path and your access to finishing and and committing to your story, your voice, is something that I think about a lot too.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, I definitely like, it's interesting. I have had the thought. I knew it was the right thing to move into directing, I think, because of how, like a DPing in a way like could stay quite contained. Like, of course I had to like commit to the work and really, you know, bring myself to the projects and like all of those things. But at the same time, I felt like I was also able to just like skate in at the end after it had already been established and put together. Yeah. Throw some images on screen, be the hero, high five everybody, and like and slip out the back door, right? Knowing then that like like they're gonna get in the edit and like everything's gonna fall apart, and then they're gonna have to put it back together. And it was kind of it almost felt cheap to me to like to just be the person who kind of came in at that one exact moment to just make it look great. Even though like what I've been going through, even on this commercial I just did, we got shut down by the wildfire in Northern California, like near Tahoe. And we shot 1.5 days. And then the second day, in the afternoon, we got like literally the wind changed, the smoke came over our location, and it just like it canceled us. And I've come back from that project, and it was even on an ad, it was a heartbreaking, just because you know, we had made a great plan and everybody had kind of anticipated and done as much as they could, and then we just like, you know, it just happened. You know, and then we get into the edit, and like it's been a real struggle to try and figure it out, because it turns out that half day that we didn't get was really like 3/4 of the stuff we needed in the edit. Mm-hmm. Couldn't have known that beforehand, but now that we're in the edit, that's the case. And so But the DP's already shot two projects since then. Like, he literally went straight to another job and then another one after that. Mm-hmm. And he sends a text like, hey, how's the edit coming? And it's like, how's the edit coming? Dude, like 90% of the work of this job has been trying to figure out how to get through this kind of gauntlet. And I feel like this is a better... I knew that as difficult as that was, it was important to kind of like complete the thoughts that mm-hmm. I felt like as a DP, I could just like skim the surface forever, you know? Mm-hmm. And yeah, I can get into it with a director and it'll be really tough, but production is like, it's kind of this weird, magical, unreal, like surface, not surface, like it's not surface. It can get quite deep, but I felt like production was this like, it was like the honeymoon of the project always, but not the real work, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I felt like as a human being engaging in film, if I did not direct, then I would not experience the kind of depth of the art form. Yeah. I could just kind of go, yeah, yeah, make it dark. Looks great, you know? And so, but it turns out, I asked for it, and I'm getting the things I asked for.
Had you already made the transition fully when you recorded these conversations?
Yeah, yeah. So I had been I recorded the bulk of them in 2020. The loose premise was I heard an interview with Greta Gerwig when she was about to make Lady Bird, her first movie. She called all these directors that she had worked with as an actor and just said, can you tell me, like, can you give me some advice? I'm about to direct my first feature. Can you give me some advice? And I heard this on it was a DGA podcast with Spike Jonze. Spike Jonze was moderating. And she was like, yeah. So I called like Noah Baumbach and, you know, Martin Scorsese and blah, blah, blah. Just rattled off like these amazing directors. And Spike Jonze like interrupted her. It was like, whoa, like, are you kidding me? You got to talk to these guys about directing, like their advice on directing. And he goes, did you record them? Like, did you like make any notes? And she was like, no, I just like, it was just for me, you know? And he was basically like, damn it. Like, damn it. Like, why did you not? And so that kind of impulse was the impetus for this podcast, which is I'd love to talk to directors about making their first feature because I'm about to make mine, right? Only I haven't yet made my first feature. And most of these conversations ended up with friends of mine who were making their second and some making their third. And so, but I think that was the kind of frame for the conversation was, you know, tell me about making your first feature, though it kind of evolved into, let's just talk about directing. I'd love to hear, like, pretend like I don't know anything, you know, what is your process? From kind of, how do you know when an idea is worth pursuing all the way to like, how many takes do you do with, you know, an actor that hasn't quite found it yet, you know? Mm-hmm. And so super granular, but also like quite esoteric, especially depending on the director. Bassam almost never wants to talk about specifics, not because specifics aren't important, but because he doesn't think about specifics. He's only thinking about kind of very, very kind of core emotional, why am I doing this thing? Which is literally, why am I putting the camera in this position? Why am I asking for another take? Whereas some directors, you know, the twin guys are much more kind of like, this shot means this. We need three takes of this. And then I need to put the camera here. And they're kind of editing as they go, you know? Both completely valid ways of going about things. But it was interesting. I kind of let the conversations go where the director wanted to take them, you know?
Did you find out a lot about the way you direct through this? Like, what did you learn about the way you approach directing and how you process and how you react?
Yeah, set? I mean, I think the thing that is super helpful about conversations like this is that however you direct is how you direct. Like, that's mm-hmm. your way of doing it. There is no wrong way to do it. And not just that, but like the way that you do it is the way that you will always do it, most likely. You can get a little bitter about this or that or the other, but for the most part, like wherever you go, there you are. You know what I mean? And so I think that if you're kind of intuitive and present, you likely are already doing the things that you can. You're already doing the things that define you as a director, that define your kind of storytelling approach. The only thing you can do is just get better at those things. But I don't know if I feel like I walked away like very encouraged that there's not a secret and there's not a right way to do anything. There's only your way and your kind of commitment to creating a space for everybody to contribute to the thing that you're trying to make. Some people do that by being extremely prescriptive, like move from here to here. They create the box and then let everybody bounce around in that box. Some people like essentially create, they get everybody there and then they engineer a scenario and then they capture it in a documentary fashion. They just let people behave and then they just capture it as if they happen to be walking by with the camera. Some people are like very, very specific about beats and kind of action and all of those things, which I find to be like very encouraging. You know, I can do whatever the fuck I want, basically. Yeah. Which I think there is a sense when you're starting out that like everybody else has already figured it out. And I just need to, like, there is this mysterious information or a holy grail of some kind that if I can find the tablets, then I will learn how to do the thing properly. And even just speaking with these six people, like, there is no, like, some of the things that the Daniels do, like Twin wouldn't be caught dead doing. And Nicky Atu would do some stuff that like Ricky would have never crossed his mind, you know? And yet they each kind of told a story that feels like only they could have told it, you know? That's the secret, I think, is that you have to become yourself in some capacity and then encourage an environment for everyone else to be themselves as well. And then you kind of are curating that moment, conducting that moment, you know, in some way, which is super interesting. The Daniels were like amazing. I realized too that many of these conversations were with directors that either had like Bassam. I met Bassam because he wanted me to DP something for him. I met Twin because they wanted me to DP something for him. And then the rest of them, Ricky, I did DP something for them. The Daniels, I had DP'd something for them. So I had this kind of like experience with them in which they had all engaged with me as a DP. Nicky Atu thought I was a DP. She didn't know I was a director. So like a lot of these initial interviews, like the DPing side was the intersection. Like that was kind of the intersection of our relationship. And so a lot of them, I feel like, saw me as a DP at least at one point in our relationship, which I think provided an interesting, I'm just realizing that now that all six of them I engaged with as a DP or they thought I was a DP. And it allowed me, I think, to kind of experience their directing style differently than if I was just a director and we were just peers. Like I worked for all of them in some capacity. And so I think I took a lot from that. From them as well. Like the Daniels, for instance, Daniel Scheinert always says the two of them would kind of like have these kind of conversations in front of everyone. Like, I think we should do this. Okay, why should we do this? And then they'd say, well, I think we should put the camera here and then we can go from this shot to that shot and this goes to there. And they'd be like, okay, but in the arc of the whatever, okay, great. And they have these incredibly like cerebral conversations in front of everyone. And then someone might go, including myself, I'd be like, well, I feel like maybe if we do this shot, that kind of gets at what you guys are trying to accomplish. And literally they would turn to me and Daniel Scheinert would go, okay, that's interesting. Like pitch me why that's the, like, why is that the good idea? You know? And then I would pitch them like, okay, well, cause you could go from here to here to here. And then that happens. And this character goes here. And that other scene we shot, that person does this. And they'd be like, that's great. Okay. Moving on. We're going to do that next, you know? And they just created this environment that was like incredibly open and like pitch me is literally the thing I heard them say like a million times, was just like, tell me why the thing you want to do is the thing that we should do. And they were incredibly like, they were super fast. They're very smart. Very, very fast. Like they would finish. I would kind of go, well, so what I was thinking was if we could go blah, blah, blah and make, okay, got it. If you go here, then there, then there. Great. Perfect. All right. I love it. I hadn't seen it that way. Let's do it. And it was it's now when I watch the movie, when I watch Everything Everywhere All at Once, I'm like, dude, I just see that shit all over it. You know, just like everybody kind of operating at that like pitch me level, which I think is like amazing. And literally only they could have done it. Like only they could have done it. Kind of created this group of people that like were able to improvise at such a structured level, you know, which is super fascinating.
That's a really fun and safe space to operate in. And it's like best idea is going to win. So just put it out and
totally. And they like, they will not just, it's not just best idea wins. They integrate that idea and then they metabolize it and it becomes part of like, they're making decisions based on that idea in an accumulation of events, right? So like 2 weeks later while they're shooting some scene because of the thing that was altered a while ago, it's now like worked its way through the entire like dough of the story, you know, which is like super fascinating because it's different than like put the camera here or tweak the light or make a stylistic or aesthetic change. It's literally like make a fundamental change that like has a cascading effect on the story itself, which is really amazing. Like really amazing to see that level of not just openness, but like confidence in their kind of story, you know, that it can sustain the injection of ingredients coming from other places, you know, which is super cool.
They must ultimately really, truly know themselves so deeply in and out for each other, of each other as well.
For sure.
Yeah. And I wonder if that having that anchor of somebody else is just a huge, huge benefit. It must be. That's something I feel like I seek. I feel like a lot of us seek that, just someone else who's just there for us, with us, holding us down so we can hold them down and then we can just play and be free.
For sure. I mean, truly amazing to see them work. And they've both made projects like separate of each other, like since, and in different ways. Like, in fact, Daniel Scheinert made a movie called The Death of Dick Long, which is like, he made it with A24, like in between, like they'd already written Everything Everywhere, but they kind of hit this moment of going like they were too close to it. And he ran off and like made this movie just to kind of like almost as a palate cleanser, almost as a just want to make sure that this didn't happen because we just both happened to go to the same college and then we both kind of like stumbled into this partnership and we made a movie and like we made some really famous music videos and like I don't know. And he ran off and did his own thing and they both came back and were like, no, this is like, this is special. There's something here that feels incredibly unique that we could not have created on our own. And they dove right back into the movie and ended up making Everything Everywhere, like right after kind of he finished his solo feature, which was super fascinating because while he was making the solo feature, Daniel Kwan threw the script out and rewrote a big chunk of it, refocused it, included a bunch of his own kind of personal story, you know, growing up as a first gen kid in New York City. And so, yeah, it was like mission critical to them kind of hitting the next evolution of their relationship, which is super fascinating.
Does it help you trust yourself a bit more? Is there anything, any direction that you need to go for your interview, by the way?
No. I'm just riffing a little bit. I think, no, it does. I think it helps me. I mean, I think too, the thing that was most fascinating about working with the Daniels, we lived in this house together for 2.5 weeks while they were making this short, which was the craziest shit I've ever seen. And I'm incredibly thankful for the opportunity because, you know, they've only worked with one DP, like Larkin Siepel, who shot their feature. And Larkin was literally on a huge movie at the time when they were going to make this little short that was part of this anthology feature. And Daniel Kwan reached out and was like, hey, I think you'd be great for this thing. There's basically no money. And, you know, I don't know. And so I went out and shot it. And then that was it. They've never worked with another DP. Like Larkin was available after that. And then he did Everything Everywhere. And it was just this like, yeah, it was this kind of like momentary blip. And it was really cool because we shot for 2.5 weeks. We lived in Miami in a giant house, and we would shoot all day and then come back at night and they would just show me like random clips on the internet. And it was like seeing a corner of the internet I did not know existed. All of their references. I never heard of any of the references. I'd never seen any of the videos. Like it was this like really amazing reminder that like our kind of filmmaking taste is this bizarre accumulation of like things that we've seen and like things that we're interested in and that we're not actually all looking at the same shit. Like everybody's kind of like pulling from all these different places. That was actually super encouraging just because I literally was like, I have no idea. I've never seen any of this before. I have no clue where you found this like crazy shit on the internet. And it was like, it was pretty cool, actually. That was super encouraging for sure. And then Bassam, you know, my interview with Bassam, like Bassam is a very, very good friend of mine now. He reminds me a lot of Elliot Rausch, who is one of my kind of closest director collaborators. He's a profoundly spiritual person, and that's how he approaches filmmaking. And, you know, every conversation I've ever had with him, every kind of like, I ran into him 3 times during the process of him making his first feature. I was in London, he shot it in London, and I happened to be in London 3 different times on projects. And Pulse actually produced the film. And so I was like in the office prepping some stupid commercial and he would like just walk through the room headed to like a conference room or something where they were like having a meeting or something. And he would just like see me and burst into tears. Just like I needed someone, you know, like I just needed somebody who like understood me. And then this is so hard and, you know, whatever. And so we'd like go get lunch or coffee or whatever. And kind of talk about, I saw him in prep. I saw him in production. I saw him in post. He was in London for 18 months. And so I saw him like every 6 months, basically during that process, which was amazing. And, when I recorded this conversation, he did not know that he was doing Marvel. We met up one time. He lived down the street from me for a while. And we met up one time. We were walking around and he was like, would you ever direct a Marvel movie? And I was like, I would love to make a piece of work that connects to a mass audience. I think there's something interesting about that, about like being a part of a project that you know from the jump, literally millions, tens upon millions of people are going to see. I think that's interesting to be a part of that kind of conversation, but no, I don't think I would. And he was like, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I would either. And then like 2 weeks later, he was like, yeah, I'm doing a Marvel movie. he was clearly like wrestling with that question, which was super interesting. But I had recorded this conversation before that. And in some ways, I think it's an interesting conversation because it's before he knows that he's going to do it. And it's really like a very pure kind of expression of what he wants to accomplish, what the purpose of filmmaking is for him. He's a very kind of devout Muslim guy. And so kind of faith and spirituality play a very, very real and specific role in kind of how he approaches his filmmaking. And I just found it to be like a very fascinating conversation in the sense that all of that was like very much embedded in what we were talking about, from casting all the way down to like how he rolls his takes, you know. I'll be interested to see like what he's able to kind of inject into that process for sure. But yeah, anyway.
I was just thinking about how individual directing is.
Yeah.
And how you've also created a space where directors can come and speak to you and connect to you.
Mm.
And I mean, the emotional toll it takes, not just on you, but on families.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like it is such an isolating, or it seems to be such an isolating experience. And even you just having these conversations, Ryan, with these people, I'm sure is a necessary and very generous gift you've given them, to feel like they're a part of a community, a part of a place, a group, a name.
Yeah. I hope so. I hope so. I definitely feel like directing feels very much like a solitary endeavor for the most part. And, you know, I mean, I say a lot that it feels like directors are sharks in a couple of ways. That number one, they can never stop moving, and that they basically live the majority of their lives alone. Or engaged with people who like stand to benefit from their, like stand to like give them something, right? So like a DP, a producer, you know, who their collaborators, like definitely, like I feel like there's a lot of extraction that happens with directors. Not that there isn't with other, you know, professions or creatives, for sure, but I feel like it can be quite lonely as a director. And I feel like the gift is really like being a director who is willing to speak plainly to another director, in a way that feels like camaraderie instead of competition, you know? Because I do feel like that's a huge gift to give each other, is like, I'm happy for you, I'm sad for you, I'm like, I'm in it with you. And I'm not like going, oh wow, I'm really glad to hear that was a horrible experience because I wish I was directing a Marvel movie. You know what I mean? Like, to just go like, dude, that sounds bananas. And not just that, but like, of course that would be so complex and overwhelming, but like, you know, you're an amazing person, friend, director, all of these things, you know, to be able to say that, I feel like is, that's my hope with this podcast, is that people listen to these interviews and like, recognize the kind of depth of conversation they hopefully are already having with their peer group. And that they like can and if they're not, that they can be honest with their kind of their friends, basically, and their peers and the people who do what they are or want to be doing, you know? Yeah.
Is that what you hope people get out of these?
Yeah. I mean, I think my hope for people in listening to this is that they realize they are already like, they're already doing it, whatever it is that they want to be doing, how they're kind of engaging with people, how they're working on the smaller budget things or the things that aren't the, you know, it's easy to kind of keep this like, mythological, like, over there, like once I get here, I'll be able to, like, then I'll be doing the thing that I'm meant to be doing or whatever. And I think that, like, I hope these conversations are a reminder that, like, whatever it is you want to be doing, you're already doing. It's like how you do the little things is how you're going to do the big things. You know what I mean? And so you can already decide to and influence your process now, even if it's like a less influential or a less prestigious or sexy version of the thing that you hope you do in the future. It doesn't really matter. Like, how you do what you do now is how you're going to do the thing down the road. You know what I mean? And that there's nothing, there is no secret. I mean, that's the other thing. There is no secret, you know? All you can do is engage thoughtfully, honestly, truthfully with a group of people who you can be honest with, thoughtful with, truthful with. That's about it. I don't think there's much else to control, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what it interests me that, I mean, since I've known you, I feel like you've always had this willingness to give to people that are through your network, through your social media, kind of to really open the curtain.
Yeah.
I'm not a director, but I'm fascinated by hearing these things because they're ultimately like life principles. But thinking about just the podcast in specific, it just, you know, I get excited because I feel like that's something that you've been cultivating for so long. And people are kind of like, I would associate Ryan Booth with a person that also really cares about people and about like others and what others are doing, you know. And it's, I think that's important because, I mean, it's been, what, 2 years, you said? So you could just put it on a shelf and I had these conversations here. I've moved on.
Yeah.
You're still kind of like, well, I want people to hear them, you know?
Yeah, important. For sure. Well, and too, I feel like, there's oftentimes this gap between me doing a thing and me putting the thing out, and that gap is typically me overthinking it. Like, I was right to record them, for sure. Like I would, the impulse was absolutely correct and true. And I picked all the right people, not because I'm like some amazing whatever, but because like the conversation I was already having with these people were like very life-giving and energizing. Right. So like, yeah, press record, boop. Like I'm already having these conversations and I feel like that's, and of course, like, I'm excited that all these things have happened for them because I'm not surprised in the slightest, because that's what I felt when I would have these conversations with them. And so, but it's the space between doing that initial kind of impulse and then the putting it out part that I feel like is my kind of eternal struggle. Like the number of things I have on hard drives of like little films that I've started or things that I've worked on or like, you know, whatever, like I have snippets of things. I mean, for fuck's sake, I have like 6 terabytes of footage of me and Yo-Yo Ma like cruising around America that like haven't talked about, haven't put out, haven't showed to anybody, haven't done, you know, and these are some of the most meaningful moments I've had with a camera in my entire career. And I'm just like, I don't know. Like, I don't know what to do with it, you know, not because it wasn't a meaningful moment, but because I'm just like, I literally, like, for some reason I get stuck releasing. And so I think for me, like, this, putting these podcasts out, even though they're old now, they're not old because I feel like these are conversations that, like, I was right to record. The impulse was correct. And I feel like I got something from them, and I would love for other people to get something from them as well, irrespective of, like, the timeline and, like, the release strategy and all that bullshit. I don't care about that, you know? Right. I just, like, they were meaningful and nourishing to me. So, and it wasn't a private conversation that I wasn't, like, everyone involved knew I was recording them. You know what I mean? Like, that too, like, my guests had my consent to record them. Yeah. They knew what we were recording. This wasn't a private conversation, you know? And so I feel like what they had to say was intended for other people as well. And so I just want to honor their kind of, time and energy by putting them out, you know, even if it's 2 years after I had most of those conversations. So, I mean, Nikki Attu, I never met her in my life, and she came, I got the Pulse, you know, Pulse is owned partially by Vice. And so I literally, like, booked a recording booth at the Vice office in Williamsburg, and Nikki Attu came in person in 2019, and we sat. Wow. I'd never met her before in my life, and we, like, sat across from each other and had this, like, 2-hour conversation. And it's crazy because so many things have changed since then. In fact, I messaged her yesterday and was like, hey, I would love to sit down with you and, like, have a proper follow-up conversation now that you've, like, made the movie and that everything's kind of moving forward and coming out and everything. And she was like, I would love that, you know? I would love to kind of talk about it further. But yeah, it's absurd. I, like, that was 4 years ago. 4 years ago we sat down and had this conversation. But it's time for all these to kind of come out so that I can do the next thing. That's the real thing. Right. Is I just, like, got to get this shit out so that I can, like, move on to the next thing. And maybe as I get older, the time between recording and releasing will will compress slightly.
Sorry. Yeah.
As a metaphor for my entire life, you know, there, like, you, the impulse is almost always right. I'd always trust my impulse, but the release impulse is like, I could use some work for sure. So, anyway. All right. Well, thank you guys so much. I didn't mean to take up so much of your time, but I appreciate you guys jumping on and, like, having this conversation with me for sure. Yeah. I'm going to chop it up and see if there's anything. To be honest with you, I don't even care if I use any of this. I appreciate you guys talking about it with me. For sure.
There's a lot of good moments. I was clocking.
Yeah.
As an editor, I'm just like, oh, yeah, there's a snippet.
That's good. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much. I really appreciate the time. And yeah, look forward to catching up again soon.
Yeah, congratulations on this. It's a big feat.
Thank you.
Pushing this out. It's medicine for people. It's necessary. It's healing. It's wonderful. All the nerdy people are going to love it.
That's right.
Do it for the nerds.
I love the nerds, man. I love the nerds so much. They're the best. Awesome. All right. Well, thank you guys so much. I'll talk to you guys soon.
All right.
Nice to meet you, Ro.
See ya.
Nice to meet you, too.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to The Process Dispatch, a conversation about directing between directors. Original music, mix, and editing by Jake McMullen. Produced by myself and Anna Ramos. Designed by Tyler Swanner, and episode artwork by Sean Bay. Please follow us on all social platforms at The Process Dispatch. For show notes and further information, visit theprocessdispatch.com. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.